Good morning and Happy New Year. First, a small aside. Whenever I'm sure anyone prepares a sermon, there's much more that you read about that's interesting than ever gets said in a sermon. Even someone like me, who's notorious for probably putting in too many points in a sermon, I do abandon many of them before. But I just wanted to say one point that I would have really liked to have gone into came from a book that came out this year, I believe it was this year, called Advent in Palestine, kind of talking about the back history of the Magi and the wise ones and sort of what was going on in Persia at that time, and just sort of emphasizing that there was a whole narrative arc there about sort of hope about a different way of sort of political rule that they were able to take back with them and sort of not just end up being the magical characters who just sort of fell in love with our story. Anyhow, I just wanted to put that out there. The book is called Advent in Jerusalem, and it's just got some really interesting history. And it doesn't get mentioned, but I'd recommend it as something if that would be of interest to you. So, and as our theme is this morning, the road isn't straight, and it's the quilt block with the paths going a lot of ways. So, yeah, I could have gone a lot of ways this morning with these stories, and that was one less traveled by me this morning. So hopefully not the one I should have taken, but yeah. Anyway, this morning we celebrate Epiphany and also the end of this worship season called Words for the Beginning that we've been following throughout December and up until this Sunday, acknowledging the many ways that this time of year is a series of beginnings. The church year begins on the first Sunday of Advent, which is always in December, and at the very end of November, actually. And the calendar year, of course, begins on the first day of January. A new tax year begins. Many things roll over in January as well. It's not a new idea to try to harness the momentum of this season of beginnings. Think of New Year's resolutions in our country when we somehow hope each year that the power of positive peer pressure will inspire or guilt us into doing things, or perhaps not doing, something we weren't able to hold on to previously. And sometimes that is exactly what we need. It's just fine to do that. I also like thinking about the question in the Isaiah passage for today. Look, I'm doing a new thing. I'm doing a new thing. Have you perceived it? God is afoot already. Do we see that? New Year's in our culture is a time of taking stock of things, reflecting on yourself, on the world, looking within and around you. What if, in addition to asking ourselves what new thing could we or should we initiate this year, what problem should we correct, what void should we fill, what if we asked, is there something that has been stirring recently, something new growing within us or around us, that we could choose to give our attention to and nurture and tend to see what it might grow into? What difference might that kind of posture of question be? The action in response might not be very different. Maybe the new thing stirring is a hunger for increased health, for example, as many New Year's resolutions are, and a desire to make a lifestyle change. But how differently that might live within us if we recognize it as a nudging of love and wisdom within us, already at work, that we could choose to recognize and give our attention and support to. I wonder. The Isaiah passage is a little bit of an odd one in a way that much scripture is, in that the author specifically reminds listeners of the ways in which God has acted in the past, the stories in which they've understood who God was, and consequently who they are as a people, formed by belief and relationship with God. Basically, the author says, Remember the God who led you out of Egypt. It doesn't say Egypt, but it talks about the parting of the seas to make a way for you. Well, that God, and the past is how they're saying you identify that God, is doing a new and different thing. Don't look to the past, even though I just reminded you of the past, and that's how you knew who I was talking about. And really, as human beings, we are deeply shaped by our understanding of time. We mix up causation and correlation all the time, because the way we know we can trust someone or something is usually based on the track record we can look to. And that's pretty sensible behavior. So why ask humans to forget the past? Most of the Bible seems to be remember, remember, remember. But as I read on, though, I wonder if that's the intent here, because the author doesn't say God is no longer a God who makes a way in a seemingly impossible situation, but rather, perhaps, that now God is making a way in a new impossible situation or setting in a new or different way. The God who once made a way when the obstacle was water, too much water, a whole sea in the way, is making a new way on land or places with little or no water. I'm making a way in the desert, paths in the wilderness. Can you see that? Sometimes I think we get too trained on, okay, God saved us this way, so forever we're going to look at the water, when there's a whole world around us in 360. Maybe the emphasis is meant to be a movement from remembering a God who acted to believing or looking for a God who acts or is acting. And just as no one could have predicted the story of Exodus, the new thing might be just as unexpected. The Magi in the Matthew story were able to see a new thing, a new star, and perceive it to be God at work. Again, what a funny story. We don't really know the details. We know the story that was passed down about it, and it's only by making sort of a patchwork composite of the Christmas stories in the Gospels that you come up with a nativity scene like the ones that we have, with Joseph and Mary in a stable, surrounded by shepherds and animals and angels and magi. None of those are in all of the Gospels, in any one of the Gospel stories. And the timelines get a little bit, you kind of have to wonder about the timelines if actually all of that could have happened on the night that Jesus was born or the days after. But our nativity scenes bring the story together. And it occurs to me that one of the really fascinating things about nativity scenes is that every figure in them is a squatter or a guest or a visitor in that stable. There is no owner or host here. This is not a home. One by one, the groups of visitors come to pay a visit to the couple who is staying in someone else's place, holding a baby who is God visiting in human form. And they each got there by very different roads, most of which were detours. The shepherds were in their fields, which is where they intended to be for the night. The Magi followed a star and then had to ask directions from a king, and then after this went home yet a different way. Mary and Joseph were traveling to reunite with family for the census, but ended up in a stranger's stable somewhere instead. And it seems to me the nativity scene is actually kind of a beautiful image of church. We've all found our way here in so many different ways, from different histories and traditions, different experiences of the same one. All guests here, all bearing gifts. Some drawn here because of an incredibly improbable suspicion that God can and does show up, and might even show up here. Some here because something interrupted us and forced us to look for shelter. Some are here because of the onset of some kind of labor, perhaps. And yes, some of us are here because they heard good singing and wanted to listen in or join in. Not everyone in the nativity stories that the nativity scene is based on became a believer or convert because of this encounter. but all were drawn by curiosity or hope in what and who Jesus might be, really, really wanting a Messiah. And that's quite an interesting beginning story for church. Look, I'm doing a new thing. I'm showing up as a baby. Can you see me now? I wonder. There's a tradition in Catholicism and Anglicanism and other sort of high church, very, very long-standing traditions of something called chalking the door at Epiphany, and which is marking the doorway to one's home or one's place of worship with an inscription of the new year separated by the letter CMB. And literally, the year is separated, so it would be like 20 at the beginning, 25 at the end, and CMB in the middle. Something like this. And the CMB could stand for Christus Mansionem Benedicat, forgive my Latin, which means may Christ bless this house. They could also stand for the traditional names of the Magi, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. As one person who practices the tradition described it, it's asking God's blessing upon those who live, work, or visit throughout the coming year. We mark our front or main entrance doors with chalk, they said, as a sign of inviting God's presence into the places, relationships, and situations that we call home. The practice resonates with God's instructions to the people of Israel in Deuteronomy 6, where Moses is said to have said, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children and talk about them when you are at home and when you are away, when you lie down and when you rise. Bind them as a sign on your hand, fix them as an emblem on your forehead, and write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Instead of chalk, some contemporary Christians put these words on a piece of paper and fix it above their doorways. And this is a tradition that Ron and Judy brought to Laurel Street, and I love the idea of practicing it here as well. I love that it's a tradition of blessing a doorway. The implication is that you're blessing a home, but by emphasizing the doorway, it emphasizes, I think, the portability of the blessing, that it follows you. It doesn't belong to a place. It's sort of blessing the portal to the place, and the place of coming and going. In the words of the blessing that Ron and Judy shared at Laurel Street when they handed these out, the words go, "Bless all who come and go through this door, both those who live here and those who visit. May all who enter through this door come in peace and bring joy. May all who come to this door find welcome and love. May the love and joy in this home overflow and spread into the community and the world." I love that emphasis about the blessing going in and out. And I love that these blessings are traditionally in chalk, too. It means that they are temporary. They need to be re-upped, just as our commitments to hospitality and to our doorways, being portals of blessing, need to be refreshed, literally and figuratively. In a minute or so, the ushers are going to pass out blessings like this for each of you, if you would like to take one for your home or household. And I love imagining all the love that comes and goes through each of your doorways each year. I was thinking about that as we were having these made and thinking of them on your doorways. I love imagining the ways that guests and visitors and the folks who deliver your mail and your pizza are blessed by their interactions with you. And I think of those ripples out into the world with joy and wonder. I'd like to invite the ushers now to go ahead and pass those out. We have enough for one per household. So if you would like to have one, please do take one. And I also hope that you take a look at the insert in your bulletin that has a reminder of each of the blessings of the themes for each week of Advent and Christmas on the key that's in your insert. And they were expressed as quilt blocks, and they made a different quilt design that went along with each of these. And these are what are on the side of the sanctuary walls, and each Sunday we have turned a new one over to see the pattern that matches the theme for that Sunday. And if you've been using the devotional booklet, you would have noticed those quilt patterns as well. But the quilt banners were made by Alicia Smith and Crescentia Voles, and you would be welcome to take one of these home with you if you would like after the service. Crescentia just asked that one be kept for her. She would like to keep one as well. But those can go home with you as well as a blessing from our worship series this season. So I invite you to take these to your home and maybe even think about the nativity scene and think about the ways in which we are, everyone who comes and goes and spends time in a house, there are ways in which we are all hosting each other and ways in which we are all guests as well, and everyone gets that blessing. So now I invite you to hear these words of blessing by Jan Richardson, which I thought were a nice marriage of this idea of blessing a year and blessing our doorways. This blessing by Jan is called The Year as a House. So, think of the year as a house, door flung wide in welcome, threshold swept and waiting, a graced spaciousness opening and offering itself to you. Let it be blessed in every room. Let it be hallowed in every corner. Let every nook be a refuge and every object set to holy use. Let it be here that safety will rest. Let it be here that health will make its home. Let it be here that peace will show its face. Let it be here that love will find its way. Here, let the weary come. Let the aching come. Let the lost come. Let the sorrowing come. Here, let them find their rest, and let them find their soothing, and let them find their place, and let them find their delight. And may it be in this house of a year that the seasons will spin in beauty, and may it be in these turning days that time will spiral with joy. And may it be that its rooms will fill with ordinary grace and light spill from every window to welcome the stranger home. Amen.